If I'd been out till 2:45, would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good afternoon. This is Dr. Rob Stahl with What Should You Expect at Your Age? The answer to that question is a lot. And my listeners, especially the older adults and caregivers out there, shouldn't settle for less. My guests on today's show are Carl and Tina Fiedelkorn, pharmacists from the UB School of Pharmacy. Welcome, Carl. Welcome, Tina. Please tell everyone a little bit about yourselves.
Well, my name's Carl Fiedelkorn, obviously. I'm Assistant Dean for Student Affairs and Professional Relations at the school. I received my pharmacy degree back in 78. I just received my, as I was telling you earlier, I just received my AARP card, so I classify as...
Congratulations. Excellent.
And I worked for an independent pharmacy for a few years, and I was a supervisor with Phase Drugs for about 18 years. And then I switched over to university, and I've been teaching there ever since.
Wow. Tremendous experience. Very diverse and well-rounded.
Thank you.
And how about you, Tina?
Well, I'm an independent consultant pharmacist. I've been doing consultant work for long-term care for the last 19 years. Prior to that, my experience with hospital pharmacy. I'm a certified geriatric pharmacist.
Well, it's great to have you here, and what we hope to do is leave you with three take-home messages. Number one, medications can help you live longer and healthier. Two, medications can make you miserable. And three, keep your pharmacist and doctor informed about all the medications you are taking, including prescription, over-the-counter, and herbal remedies. First, let's listen to some comments from my patients about medications they have taken.
Now, of all the medications that you've taken in your life, is there one that's helped you the most?
No, I don't think so.
Is there one that's hurt you the most, or that you're sorry you started taking it?
I don't think so.
Took Basodec, and that was bad for me. I stopped urinating. That doesn't sound very nice, but that's what happened.
Well, it was sort of cool. Took away my taste buds, that's why I hate it. Can't taste my food anymore. But I take my medicine, and I eat my food, even though it all tastes like oatmeal.
I don't think you ever told me that.
Over the counter, called Q10. When I started to take that, I just kind of perked up and felt so much more alive. I just felt so good. Extract Alpha, I think they called it.
Okay.
And it was to perk you up or make you think better or whatever. Then I took it. And since I stopped it, I'll never stop thanking you because it just turned me around again.
Well, there you have it. There's quite a potpourri of issues that were discussed there. And any comments offhand?
Well, a lot of medications you take for a lot of different conditions, chronic conditions, they're supposed to help enhance a quality of life. And a lot of the people I noticed when they were talking on this little mini interview had mentioned they were having other problems. I picked up on a lady with the sleep medications and the pain medications, and she's probably having an additive effect to all the adverse reactions of those. So she was saying that she was having real problems staying alert.
Well, I also think the other thing is that you have to think about is whether or not the drug, the benefits of the drug outweigh the risks. Definitely, if it doesn't enhance your quality of life, then you really need to talk to your physician and pharmacist about whether or not this is appropriate drug for your condition.
Quality of life. And for a pharmacist, how do you interpret that for your patients?
Well, I think quality of life would enhance the way you can do your activities of every day. So if, say, for example, the woman who's taking pain medications, obviously if she's suffering from pain, she may not be able to be as physically active and therefore can't participate, whether it be gardening or exercise or whatever. However, if she's given a pain medication that corrects the pain but she's groggy all the time and she's falling, well, that doesn't really enhance her quality of life. It may put her at a greater detriment in terms of falling and breaking a hip in that case.
Now, what about the people who mentioned vitamin-type remedies, herbal remedies, the CoQ10, the Lutein, and things like that?
Well, I thought that was the second half of this program. So,
well, you can touch on that right now. You can touch on that.
There's a lot of herbal remedies out there, and, of course, there's a lot of OTC remedies out there. And the biggest thing that I have and the biggest concern I have is, one, do they really work? Is it more of a placebo effect than anything? Two, are they buying good quality herbal I don't want to call them medications because they're not medications. They're herbals and diet supplements. You know, are they buying good quality supplements from a good quality manufacturer? You know, and that's the kind of thing I look at. Most of your brand name pharmaceutical companies also come out with their own lines of herbal medications. Here I go, herbal medications again. Got caught. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing to look at. And the best people to ask is your doctor or pharmacist about that.
And you mentioned the placebo effect. Can you explain that a little bit?
The placebo effect is where somebody will give you something and they'll say, you know, and somebody says, well, I have this headache and, you know, I've had it for like 3 days. And they say, well, I got something really good for you. Here, take this because I bought this at this health food store and it's going to eliminate your headache in the next 5 minutes. And I guarantee it. And, you know, we've used this for years, and it's wonderful. And then a person takes it, and 5 minutes later, they say, this is wonderful. And I was just, absolutely, my headache's gone. You know, well, what did you give me? And I said, well, I gave you a sugar cube out of the, you know, out of the sugar bowl or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And it's actually, and, you know, people, especially with pain, a lot of it has to do with perception, your perception of what something's going to help you and how's that going to help you. And a lot of people live on that. You know, Aunt Molly took it for the last 20 years, and it's great, and I believe Aunt Molly, and it's really going to cure me, and you're really going to go. And is it really going to work or really not? That's what you really have to look at.
I just wanted to mention that all these medications work hand-in-hand. It's not compartmentalized that, okay, you just take a blood pressure medication and it takes care of blood pressure, and you take care of a sugar for a medication just for blood sugar, and that takes care of that. They all interact in their own way. So it really is very, very important to make sure that your pharmacist and your physician know all the drugs, all the supplements that you are taking.
And some people get medications from different pharmacies for different reasons. The prices may be better at one pharmacy compared to another, and that makes it very difficult to track what someone's on.
That's right. That's true.
You mentioned close monitoring, and one of the things that we'll go back to these ACE inhibitors, that it can cause a high potassium, and it can affect your kidney function, as that one patient mentioned. And it's very important that when your doctor gives you a prescription to get a blood test to monitor the drug, that you go for it. When the doctor wants you to go for it. Sometimes if you wait a month, you could get into trouble. If you've been on the drug for that month and your potassium is building up gradually, it can become very problematic. So you have to go and for these follow-up tests to ensure that you're not getting hurt by the medication.
I think it's also important when you said about blood tests and monitoring. Patients can also self-monitor themselves, obviously through blood pressure, make sure it's bringing their blood pressure down, their blood glucose if they're diabetic, things of that nature. And that's important to do that too.
I have some statistics here that are a few years old, but they're still fairly accurate. 1.5 billion prescriptions are written in the United States each year. 1/3 of those are written for people 65 and over.
That's correct.
It's now 3.1 billion.
Now it's 3.1 billion.
Yes.
Okay, so these statistics are only a few years old. What's accounted for that tremendous increase?
Well,
is it the television ads?
It's probably a direct consumer advertising advertisement. It is more people in certain areas get more drug coverage. Anytime a copay card crisis-free medication is dropped, people have a tendency to be on more things. A lot of different reasons. The population has grown and expanded. The baby boomers have grown and expanded. The baby boomers now, which represent approximately 76 million out of the 283 million people in the United States, want to stay healthier longer, and they're more educated and on and on. We live in a good society. Parents laid down a good framework in society for us. So, you know, the American society is more affluent, so we want more. And I always tell people are surprised at my age, and I always say, well, I didn't look like my father when he was 50. You know, I'm 50, and I can play basketball and do everything my dad couldn't back then. And it was a lot of the things that they laid down, a lot of the, I think, the advancements in medicine and things like that, that we do and we want to do. And a lot of medications are over the counter now, too.
Well, I also think our society is very much a quick fix society. I mean, you talk about weight control. That's a great example. Everybody wants a quick fix. Nobody wants to exercise and diet. We just want to pop a pill and you know.
That's right.
Actually, I had a personal experience with my dad. My father turned 80 this month, and he is taking Vioxx, which is a type of non-steroidal, and he's getting this headache, so now he started taking handfuls of Advil and Aleve, and all of a sudden he's vomiting. He's really sick to the stomach, and I talked to him last week, and he was complaining of these symptoms, and I said, what are you taking? And he proceeded to list all these medications of all the same category, and I said, Dad, you need to stop everything, and you need to call your doctor tomorrow. I called him back yesterday to see how he was doing, and lo and behold, he said, I feel so much better. You really know what you're talking about.
Well, that's where the problem comes in with the brand names, which might seem like different medications, but when you come back to the generic name, they're all the same. Let's first finish off the prescription medications. What are the three most important things for people to be concerned about with prescription medications?
I really thought about four, and maybe Tina here can add on to that. First, are they working? Are they working correctly? Meaning, is it dropping your blood pressure like it's supposed to? Is it, if you're on an antibiotic, is your infection going away, your fever going down, or your cough being relieved, or are you able to go back to work? Are there any kind of adverse effects? You know, are you getting diarrhea from it, or you're breaking out in a rash, or you know, you're urinating too much, and or things of that nature, which you should go back and report to your doctor and pharmacist both, so they both can mark it in the records. The third thing that I thought of was a drug interaction. I think one of the statistics, I think if you're on three or more drugs now, you have over a 90% chance of a drug interaction occurring. And not all drug interactions are bad things, and not all occur. They, you know, a lot of them are very minor, but some can be very serious. And this is the thing that pharmacists constantly watch and look after. And you know, we have sophisticated computer programs that look at things like that too, and the occurrence of that.
Now you had an issue with your father, I believe.
Well,
it may not have been an interaction, but a toxicity.
Well, what he had done, my brother had taken my father to another physician that he wanted him to see, and so on and so forth. And it was actually just one of these outpatient clinics, real quick. And because he said, "Geez, I think that should be worked out for something else." And while they were there, they changed my father's dose, lonoxin dose, and without letting me know, you know. And several weeks later, I happened to see my dad at a party, whatever, and my dad looked very pale. He was shaking. He was cold. And I said, "Dad, what's going on?" And he said, "Geez, I haven't felt good at all," and, you know, on and on. And as I talked to him further, I realized, I said to myself, gosh, if I couldn't swear, he was in ditch toxicity, just by the way he looked, he acted, all the symptoms, what he was telling me. So finally I turned to my brother and I said, "Has he been taking any other medications?" "Oh, I took him to this other doctor and he increased his dose." So I went back to his regular doctor and ran a digital level, and he was toxic. And this is especially true of seniors. As I mentioned to you, my dad just turned 90 and Tina's dad just turned 80. And one of the things we discovered they do, they save every medication they've ever been on. My dad's got medications. I just turned 50 and he's got medications he had hidden away that were older than I was.
Because you never know.
Because they always said, "You never know." And it's very important, once you're done with the medication or once you can switch off the medication, throw it away. And the best way to throw it away is to flush it down the toilet. You know, obviously, you want to take it out of the vial first. You got to flush in the vial, but you have to make sure that that's done.
Well, sometimes people have their spouse's medications, their friends and neighbors' medication,
their dogs and cats' medication. It's very important to, I don't want to say avoid, but avoid until you can really, you really need an antibiotic is what I'm saying. Because a lot of the more powerful ones, you know, my friend was put on this, you know, this new. New drug, the fluoroquinolone drug, and I want that one too. And I saw this on TV, and I want that one because they only have to take it once a day, and the one you're giving me is twice a day. And that's not really how it works. And how it works is you want to take the least expensive, the least powerful one to cure you of the infection you have. And that brings up another important point we didn't say all the way through this, is the point of adherence. And many of the medications and many of the problems that people have, many times they forget to take their medication. They don't take it like they're supposed to. They take it at the wrong times.
I wanted to jump back to the antibiotics. One of the other things that the listeners need to be aware of is that antibiotics will not cure a cold. It will not cure viruses. It's there to eradicate a bacterial infection. So it is really important. A lot of times you'll have an antibiotic that maybe has a 7 to 10 day course. By the third day, you're feeling great, and you think, "Oh, I don't need it." But that bacteria is still lurking in your body. It needs to be totally eradicated in order to take care of the problem. Otherwise, what will happen is a few weeks from now, you'll feel bad again. And then that antibiotic may not be able to take care of the problem. You'll have to go to a stronger antibiotic.
Let's go to over-the-counters. And why don't we start with a common drug. I've heard a lot of patients tell me they take this, and I've had to stop it in a lot of patients because of the problems that they were getting. Tylenol PM. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, that brings up the point of the brand names and the names that you see of over-the-counter drugs. It's very important to read the label. And it's also very important to talk to your pharmacist. Now, most of these items you can get almost anywhere, even in stores without pharmacies. But it's very important before you grab something over-the-counter, which OTC stands for, over-the-counter, that you discuss with your pharmacist a few things. What do you want it for? Okay. And two, what other conditions you have? Because you could be taking something over-the-counter that's going to interact on prescriptions. Now, what you brought up, Tylenol PM, that's got, obviously, Tylenol acetaminophen in there, and I believe it also has something known as a Calmatab to make you feel good, or an antihistamine, diphenhydramine, and histamine in there, to kind of relax you, okay, which can be kind of a dangerous thing.
And it's really the side effect of the antihistamine that is helping you to become drowsy and to help with the sleep, and that's why it's marketed as a sleep aid.
Sure.
What problems can an antihistamine cause in older people?
Lots of problems. The antihistamines actually have what we call an anticholinergic effect, where you can get very dry, constipation is a major problem, grogginess with the sedation, in which case the Tylenol PM is using that as its effect, but it could cause actually a hangover the next day. And again, with the elderly, if they're very frail, they're not stable on their feet, it increases that risk for falls. It can adjust their eyesight. It can actually cause blurred vision. And it also can cause mental status changes, where they become very, very confused or very, very lethargic. So here is an over-the-counter product that for somebody years ago, before we had all the new antihistamines out there and we suffered from allergies, it was a great product. I mean, it took care of all those people with hay fever. And as you get older, a product like this, the side effect of the anticholinergic effects can be very detrimental to the elderly. Just touched about herbal supplements. I think that there's a couple issues that we need to be concerned about with herbals. One is that there is no, it's not FDA regulated, so there's no good quality control. So there's a variance from batch to batch depending on when you purchase it. The other thing is that, and this is not to dispute that there is a place for herbal supplements, but we really don't know all the interactions with herbals and medications. St. John's Wort is a great example of that. When it first came out, it's used for depression, and everybody just, you know, thought it was the greatest thing going, and you didn't need a prescription for it. Well, lo and behold, as the public used it more, we found that it had a lot of drug interactions. We had to be concerned about people who were on Coumadin. We're not trying to dispute the fact that herbals don't have a place, but you need to put it in its perspective that if you're on prescription medication, there may be an unknown there of how, whether or not it may interact with your prescription medications.
It's important to note, too, not only with herbals, but different foods that you eat, too. I mean, those will react. You know, I had brought up about
that,
drug interactions, but there's also a drug-food interactions. You know, grapefruit is the big thing, and people always ask, can I take that with my grapefruit juice in the morning, or can I have a grapefruit?
People know about that.
Yeah, and that, those are important things, because those things come out once in a while. Or there's certain antibiotics that, you know, tetracycline you can't take with milk, because that helps, that'll bind it up and cause other problems.
Well, thank you so much. We covered a lot of ground, a lot of important issues today. That was Carl and Gina Fugelkorn from the UV School of Pharmacy, a resource of knowledge here.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
Well, it was great. This is Dr. Rob Stahl. See you next week.
My head, many years from now, will you still be sending me a Valentine? Birthday greetings, bottle of wine.